shoulder then. I'm younger than that now.
And hello again, everybody. Mark Middleton along with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder. And coming up in just a moment, the happiness equation, one man's simple formula for enjoying every day.
And in addition, we got some dude logic from a 60-year-old skateboarding icon and another revealing visit with the always thought-provoking 93-year-old artist, the amazing Harold Gard.
And you won't believe it, a 4'6", 83-pound, 100-year-old woman who is a world record holder in track and field.
And if you don't think you can teach old dogs new tricks, well, stick around, because we're Growing Bolder. He is the New York Times best-selling author whose areas of expertise are, how about this, awesomeness and happiness. His first book, The Book of Awesome, has been published in 10 countries, spent more than 5 years on all kinds of bestseller lists, and he sold more than a million copies.
He is a great writer, and his new book is The Happiness Equation, which presents a formula for a happy life in a highly entertaining and very thought-provoking way, which really is no surprise because this guy is a Harvard MBA. He's one of the most popular TED speakers of all time. Let's welcome one of the world's leading advocates of positivity and simple pleasures, Mr. Neil Pasricha. Hey, Neil, how are you?
I'm doing so well. Thank you for having me back on the show. It's great to be here.
Tell us that you woke up happy this morning.
You know, I didn't. I didn't. I woke up at, my first interview was at 5:20 a.m. I'm in San Francisco. And that's actually kind of the point of the book, The Happiness Equation, is that happiness is a choice, but you got to invest in it. And so we can talk about that later, but it's like, you know, you guys highlighted all the success I had with the Book of Awesome. I got a secret for you, though, and I didn't share this with you on the air because I was still wrestling with it. I wasn't happy as I was going through all that. Newspapers are calling me the Pied Piper of happiness, but I'd lost 40 pounds due to stress. I was single because it was the divorce that actually prompted me to write those things. And it wasn't until I met Leslie, we got engaged, got married, and went on a honeymoon, that on the flight on the way home, she told me she was pregnant, and then I thought, I want my kid to be happy, so I started writing what turned into a 300-page letter to my unborn child, and that letter is The Happiness Equation. That book you have now is the letter I wrote to my son before he was born.
Well, hopefully you are happy now, but even if you're not, it doesn't mean the book isn't great. It's kind of like a chef who may be laboring back in the kitchen, and the people in the restaurant are going to enjoy what he creates, but sometimes you got to sacrifice yourself, Neil, so the rest of us can be happy. But let's start with the formula itself, because it's on the cover of the book. Your happiness equation is want nothing, contentment, do anything, freedom, and have everything, which you say translates into happiness. Not exactly Einstein's theory of relativity, but certainly more impactful in our everyday lives. How did you come up with the equation?
Sure. And I should say, when I woke up this morning, I did my 10-minute meditation using Headspace, and then I was happy. Like, it's just about doing the exercises. But on the subtitle, here's what happened. I've been invited to be a guest speaker at this incredible conference every summer. It's for the highest potential 15 and 17-year-olds in the country. So these people get together. I've been going for years. And they used to ask me questions like this. How do I get into a good school? How do I make more money? Now, their values have shifted. The questions I get today are, how do I reduce my anxiety? How do I find balance? How do I get more space in my life? How do I become a better lover or a better friend in my relationships? Why am I so stressed all the time? And so the equation on the front of the book hints at what I think is our shifting value system. We want contentment. We want freedom. Those are the two big things that help our happiness. And the 9 secrets in the happiness equation hit on, there's 3 for each of those 3 phrases. So there's 3 under want nothing, 3 under do anything, and 3 under have everything.
Yeah, it's so interesting, Neil, the way you break it down, because you make us start to think about how the whole thing works. One of the things that you get into that really stops a lot of people in their tracks is you say we go about the whole pursuit of happiness thing backwards, that being happy is not the end of the road. It comes first. Now, that's a whole lot easier said than done. Why then? Why is it so hard for us to be happy?
Yeah, it's so hard because we have the most complex object in the entire universe hidden between our ears, right? The human brain, like it's the most complex object in the universe. And those brains have been in our heads for 200,000 years, right? Since Homo sapiens existed. And you know what? For 199,900 of them, we had 30-year lifespans, and we were looking for survival. Give me food, give me shelter. That's why when you get a blood test back from your doctor, you quickly check your cholesterol, or in my case, you know, the one that might be off. If you get a test back from your teacher, you quickly look for the red X. You want to see which one you did wrong. Performance reviews, you know, appraisals, these things only confirm to us the way our brains naturally think, which is to find a problem and fix a problem. So why is it so hard to be happy? Because our brains are trained to find and fix problems. We're not actually trained as a species to sort of think about exercises we can do, like, you know, writing down 5 gratitudes, meditating, journaling for 20 minutes, as ways to increase our happiness. In fact, our whole design of the world confirms to us this looking for problem and finding problem mentality that we have.
Folks, we're talking with Neil Pasricha, who has written a great book, The Happiness Equation, and I mean that sincerely. This thing is a lot of fun to read. I couldn't help but bounce around because it was so interesting and a lot of very short nuggets in there. And one of the nuggets I really enjoyed, Neil, is you remind everybody to remember the lottery. Tell us what you mean about that.
Sure. Here's what I mean by remembering the lottery. There's 115 billion people who have ever lived, okay? You get to be one of the 7 billion people alive today. That means 14 out of every 15 people who have ever lived will never have a bowl of chocolate ice cream again, will never kiss their kids goodnight, will never see another sunset. You already won the lottery if you get to enjoy and see any of those small pleasures. By the way, you only get 25,000 sunsets in your life. That's the average lifespan, 25,000 days. So I'm saying enjoy it. If you make more than $5,000, that's the world average income, okay? If you live in the U.S., you're in one of the happiest countries in the world. I know it doesn't always feel like it every day, but when you think about the safety we have, lack of, you know, lack of corruption, lack of, you know, major kind of, you know, government violence and, you know, militia groups and stuff like that other countries are dealing with, it's like we got it pretty good, right? And so remembering the lottery is about taking a step back and realizing how lucky you are to be alive.
You know, lives don't go on forever, which is a great point, but before they end, in many cases, they end with something called retirement, something that you're not really in favor of.
No, it's turning into the most controversial point of the happiness equation, the secret number 4, which I label the dream we all have that is completely wrong. Listen, retirement was invented out of the blue in 1889 in Germany when Chancellor Otto von Bismarck, who had a youth unemployment issue, you know, he had all these kids that couldn't get jobs, he said, okay, I got an idea. If you're 65 years old or older, you can leave if you want, and we'll pay you a little bit of money till you die. Well, the average lifespan back then was 67 years old. We hadn't even invented penicillin yet. So Chancellor von Bismarck created the arbitrary world standard. And so countries around the world adopted this. Now we're living longer, and we want to retire earlier. We believe that we've created, you know, a life of leisure that we've earned. But the problem is we don't actually want to do nothing. We actually want the 4 S's, okay? We want social. We want stimulation of learning new things. We want the structure in our lives of having some reason to get up in the morning. And we want a story. We want to be part of something bigger than ourselves, okay? Those 4 S's, social stimulation, structure, and story, I don't care if you make money. You just need to be doing something you love. You can be working for a nonprofit group or a church group. So I advocate never retiring, but instead always be doing something productive. And I actually say in the book, the healthiest societies in the world, like in Okinawa, where their lifespan is 7 years longer than ours, 7 years longer, they don't even have a word for retirement. Literally nothing in their language describes the concept of stopping work. You always work because you feel productive and you get the 4 S's.
One of the words they do have, though, Neil, and a word that you like a lot is ikigai. Tell us about that.
Sure. Ikigai, which is spelled I-K-I-G-A-I, is a Japanese term that means the reason you get up in the morning. Okay? They have more 100-year-olds there than anywhere else in the world. National Geographic researchers studied them. They called that place a blue zone. So I gave Leslie, my wife, for Christmas last year, an Ikigai card. It cost me 10 cents. You just take a piece of paper, you fold it in half, and you leave it on your bedside table. So she's a teacher, right? So she wrote down, to educate leaders who make a difference in the world. And me trying to be a writer, I'm like, to spread happiness throughout organizations. When you open your eyes in the morning, your Ikigai card tells you where you're going. And if you know where you're going, you feel more productive and happier throughout your day.
So what's the most important thing, Neil? Where should we start in our journey to being more fulfilled, more happy?
Well, the way I think I would recommend people start is to set a 20-minute reminder in your calendar, okay? I don't care if it's in the morning or at lunch or at the end of your day. What I see right now in society is everybody walks around with gym memberships, right? We all know we have to train our physical health. And people say things like, yeah, I missed going to the treadmill for 20 minutes at lunch, but I'll do it tonight. What I'm actually saying is take 20 minutes a day and invest it in your happiness, okay? I would love to hear people in the office say, oh, I missed my 20-minute journaling at lunch, but I'm going to do it tonight. Or I missed my 20-minute walk at lunch, because we know walking is a huge help for happiness, but I'll do it tonight. Little things like that. Or I missed my 20 minutes of writing down my 5 gratitudes. Okay, in the happiness equation, I share the 7 exercises you can do to be happier. I just named 3 of them. There's other ones, like doing a random act of kindness, right, is another example. Meditating, 3 walks, journaling. You know, we can talk about these in detail, but the point is, if you just spend 20 minutes a day for 20 days in a row working on your happiness, you get all the positive outcomes. You're more productive, you're more creative, you're more of a pleasure to be around, and the best news of all, I'll even give you 3,000 extra days of life. Happier people live an average of 10 years longer.
Let's leave it right there, folks. He is the guru of positivity and simple pleasures. And Neil, it certainly has been a simple pleasure for us to spend this time with you. His name is Neil Pasricha. His book is called The Happiness Equation. It will most definitely change the way that you think about your time, your career, your relationships, your family, and ultimately, most importantly, your happiness. Coming up, The Art of Rebellion, our provocative visit with artist Harold Gard. That's next on Growing Bolder. Growing Bolder and Humana are celebrating the opportunity of aging and smashing stereotypes with the new 65 Plus. We're sharing examples of people 65 and older who are pursuing their passions and leading happy, healthy, and active lives. You can inspire others by sharing your own photos and stories. Find more information at growingbolder.com/new65plus.
The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. Mark Middleton and Bill Schaefer here with more of Growing Bolder. You know, there's no question that a common experience of those who reach their 90s and 100s is loss. Yeah, you lose your keys, some of your hearing, some of your eyesight, but you lose many of your friends and many of your relatives. Those who maintain a real quality of life into their later years, they're able to adapt and move on from each and every loss.
Yeah, it's a great point, Bill, and they're able to do that because they still have passion for life. They still have something that gets them up every morning. And for Harold Gard, that something often gets him up in the middle of the night. Gard is an accomplished artist, an abstract painter, now in his mid-90s, who finds his purpose in a blank canvas in the battle that ensues as he pursues the perfect painting. Harold Gard is a great-great-grandfather, and by most accounts, a great artist. Now in his mid-90s, the renowned American expressionist still paints daily, still struggling to solve what he calls unsolvable puzzles to create the perfect painting.
If I'm up in the middle of the night, half asleep, trying to figure out what to do with the painting, putting on my robe and checking it out and say, did I really think that that was finished? You better get your coffee, better wake up and go to work. And I do.
Gard lives a lifestyle of relative isolation that provides the focus necessary to nurture his creative talents, even though he does admit to periods of loneliness.
My ability to enjoy what I do is in the thing I really wish were not there, but it is in the loneliness. It's in the desperate loneliness of saying, whatever I'm doing now, is it more meaningful than what I've done before?
Guard's need to experiment and to evolve, even in his 90s, creates a daily struggle that has become his life's passion and purpose.
And is that solely an intellectual struggle, or as you've gotten older, is it also a physical struggle?
The struggle begins when I try to take that weary old body out of bed, and I look back to see if I left any parts behind.
But this is where the real battle is waged. Guard against the canvas, refusing to paint for collectors, shows, galleries, or museums. He paints only for himself, refusing to repeat himself, moving on from the powerful figurative abstractions that he painted in his 80s, still living a life of artistic rebellion.
I'm doing something that established the idea that I am me. I stand on a history of rebellion if I'm dealing with the art. I'm rebelling against things I can't do anymore, options I no longer have. But I'm not living in the regret of that. I have the time to sit here and talk to somebody who I think is smart, who's energetic, who's doing splendid things. I have the time to get up in the morning, get angry with what I see on television, decide to have a second cup of coffee and say, no, I can't do that. Good. So now you've gotten rid of your excuses, get in the studio and paint. And that's what I do.
So what do you say to people that believe that life after 75 or 80 or 85 or even 90 is not worth living?
I agree with them.
Your life isn't worth living right now?
Mine is.
Oh.
But anybody asking that question, the answer is, yeah, you're probably right. It probably isn't.
What makes your life worth living?
I haven't solved all the problems. I haven't done the perfect painting.
Do you think you'll ever reach the point where you will feel good going quietly into the night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that we all should have that privilege. I should be able to do what my wife wanted from the doctor. I want to be able to say, you know, I want to go to bed tonight and not get up tomorrow. That's fine. I want that privilege. And what happens to my artwork after that? I hope if it's a very cold night and they build a bonfire, they'll get some warmth out of it.
Guard will answer the difficult questions, the controversial and philosophical questions, but don't waste his time asking about his artistic legacy.
There are a lot of questions that are just not worth asking, let alone answering. Part of me still needs to feel that I'm a contributing human being. It is an energy form. And I think that insisting on doing individual paintings, creating something which establishes a visual truth, is important. It's what I do.
How well is he doing it? This is as close as he'll come to validating his own work.
There's the feeling that if I stay with it long enough, I will have something of which I'm not ashamed.
Harold Guard lives in the moment, and at this moment, his passion for pursuing the perfect painting is stronger than ever. What an amazing guy. And you know, Bill, it's obvious whenever we visit Harold that he thoroughly enjoys the company and the conversation. But I got to tell you, folks, no more than we do. He is, as many people in their 80s and 90s and even 100s are, a fascinating guy with a strong perspective on life. And like many in his age group that we've come to know, he's fighting the tendency to become invisible, which is something that our society unfortunately does to many older people.
Can I complain a minute here?
Yeah, please.
It's one of the worst things that we do as a culture. We lump all older people into one big stereotype. And you know, you're right, Mark. For the most part, our society tells them your lives are over, certainly in terms of any meaningful contribution, and we're not really interested in who they were or what they've accomplished.
Yes, society has come to tell us that when we get to be old, we have no future, our pasts don't matter, both of which are profoundly untrue, which is why we choose to find and then celebrate people like Harold Guard.
And you know, the greatest thing about him, Mark, you never know what he's going to say. You might think that he's going to go one direction or another, but the man is honest. He's fearlessly honest.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and we will continue to follow his exploits because I know one thing about Harold Guard, and that is, he's not done yet. Up next, a look at aging through the eyes of an award-winning architect who says being old is one of life's greatest blessings, and we should all joyously begin preparing for it in our 40s. That is growing bolder.
Support for Growing Bolder provided by
Savings accounts should build wealth, not add expenses. Raisin gives savers access to high-yield savings accounts, money market deposit accounts, and certificates of deposit from over 70 banks and credit unions. Find, fund, and manage multiple savings products all through a single secure login. More information at raisin.com/growingbolder. Well, as we all know, aging is inevitable, and if we're lucky enough to make it to old age, we will have plenty of issues to deal with. When Matthias Howitch was 40, he looked ahead to the next 40 years of his life, and he didn't like at all what he saw, especially when it came to potential living arrangements. So he's now on a mission to change how society as a whole, and specifically the architecture profession, thinks about aging. He's laid it all out in a new book about aging and architecture that's called The New Aging, Live Smarter Now to Live Better Forever. Let's find out more as we welcome Matthias Howitch. Hey, Matthias, how are you?
I'm good. Great to be on your show.
Well, we love your work, and your story is very interesting. You're still in your early 40s, but yet you call yourself old. In fact, you say you believe we all ought to begin calling ourselves old earlier. Why?
Yeah, I think we have to provoke a little bit of a conversation, right? Because our society is living in denial. We want to be young forever. But the reality is that we're aging, and it's a process that if we are not paying attention, then it might not going to go the way it should go or could go. And that's why I believe that if we confront that we're getting older ourselves, we can open our eyes and do the right things.
So if we're going to call ourselves old at any age, let alone earlier, we've got to change the perception of what being old is, because for many, those who have adopted active lifestyles, it's nothing like what it used to be. And you start your book with the plea to love aging. You say that aging is a gift.
Yes, aging is really a gift that we get with life. And when you think about it, is actually when we're getting older, we actually have to become pioneers, because we go into a moment in life where most, where actually no person who lives today has ever been before. So it's kind of a challenging task, and there are a lot of unknowns and uncertainties, and that's what a pioneer has to do. He has to figure out what are the unknown and the uncertainties and find a solution. And that is really my core call for action, for everyone to really pioneer their own lives, and to make it the best life possible.
You know, one of your points, which I think is a great one, is that most of us wait too long to begin adjusting our lifestyle to the point that it becomes very traumatic. You talk about avoiding the trauma of what you call the Big Bang approach to downsize. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, there are actually moments where you also see in statistics where actually age depression really spikes up. And that's, for example, a moment when people have to surrender their driving license and they have to give away their car. And that kind of moment of surrendering the car by other people's demand is something we can avoid when very early on we look into possibilities to be mobile without a car and get rid of it and be self-determined and find a way how we can maintain that kind of active lifestyle that we all want and desire. But to make sure that we can do that actually for all the time, also past the moment where maybe our eyesight create some kind of challenges for us. And that's also for our houses. It's really, really easy early on when we do have to do a renovation, just to keep in mind that there are a couple of adjustments that are really helpful for the future. For example, in a bathroom, that you have enough space to navigate around, either way with some physical deficits that you do when you walk or even when you need a wheelchair for a period of time, so that your bathroom is not becoming the hindrance of the activities in your house just because of the pure dimensions of it.
We're talking with Matthias Hollwitz, who has written a book called The New Aging, Live Smarter Now to Live Better Forever. Matthias is an architect, and he is challenging the profession to rethink how they design for the aging. And Matthias, you designed a unique development in Palm Springs, California for the LGBT community, which is really more at risk as it ages because many are afraid to go into traditional senior homes. Many don't have children. How is that project going? Has it been built or will it be built?
Yeah, the project is fascinating because we actually invited many different architects to join forces with us to look into a retirement, which we call an empowerment community, kind of rethought from the ground up. We had great momentum a couple of years ago, but it happened that actually the market had not recovered as quickly as our developer wanted, and he had to give away actually the property where he intended to build it. So the project itself right now, in its form we designed it, it's unfortunately not happening. But all of these kind of thoughts and ideas are now out in the open. And thankfully, actually, my firm is getting a lot of questions about possible future developments. So we see a prosperous future where we hopefully then can really apply this thinking into the built environment.
Yeah, I was going to say building it is one thing, but maybe even more important, more powerful, is at least raising the consciousness about the issues. And one of the things you write about is extending the concept of family as we age and treating close friends like family so that you have a broad, far-reaching support network as you age. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when you look into successful aging, we can look actually back in history. It used to be that families take care of each other, family members of all ages, so that you could live and get all the support from the people who are closest to you. The reality of modern life is that we move around and we live in all kind of different places and situations. So now we have to find a new way how we can create that kind of in-depth social network around us. And while family might live a little bit further away, we can now invite our friends to take on some of these roles what family provided to us in history. And that really means that we have to create very social close bonds with people around us, that we have to start to introduce them into our, let's say, family routines, maybe doing Thanksgiving together and some of these kind of celebrations. And then ultimately, we could also imagine maybe to move together with friends and live in a house and share some of the responsibilities and the opportunities. And that actually then is a call to all of us architects to design houses differently, that it doesn't just, the configuration doesn't just allow families to live together, that actually friends can live together with the kind of more sense of privacy, but then also the kind of public areas where the friends can come together with.
Yeah, it's a great point because I think one thing everybody agrees upon is that the ability to socialize, the ability to maintain strong social connections is key to active longevity. Another issue that we all deal with these days is retirement, and you encourage people to never retire, at least not in the traditional sense. What do you think retirement should look like, Matthias?
Yeah, I always say quite jokingly to people when they tell me that they look forward to retirement, that I say that they should actually change job and find one they want to do forever, which has, of course, some meaning because when you look at longevity areas, it's proven that where people turn the oldest, these are areas where people live and work all life long. So retirement, you may want to get rid of your 9-to-5 job, but it's really important to continue with meaningful activities. And that could be that you follow your hobby and make that a real passion. Could be volunteering in your community and in your neighborhood. Or a couple of older people actually start up a company and use all the knowledge and the networks they have and actually continue to be very engaged in their professional life.
You know, it is great to see, folks, great to hear that people in all areas of life now are beginning to realize that it's never too late. Matthias Holwich is one of the good guys. He's an architect who is trying to change the opportunity, the support that surrounds us as we age. His new book is called New Aging, Live Smarter Now to Live Better Forever. An interesting read, not just from the prospect or the position of architecture, but from how you live your life on a day-to-day basis. Matthias, thanks so much. Up next, a skateboarding icon and the author of Dude Logic. What's that? We'll find out when we talk to Neil Unger on Growing Bolder.
And a glimpse of our past fades away so fast, like a castanet dance in the night.
We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
You're listening to Growing Bolder. I'm Bill Schaefer along with Mark Middleton. And Mark, put your helmet on for this one because it's going to be a blast. Our next guest is a stereotype smashing 60-year-old. And this guy refuses to let anybody define him or his life. His passion in life, skateboarding. And chances are you've seen this guy doing his thing on YouTube.
Yeah, long white hair, white beard, and the body of an 18-year-old. What does he like about skateboarding? The thrill, the challenge, the hanging out with other skateboarders? Sure, all of that. But mostly he says he likes the way it quiets his mind. He's the author of the book Dude Logic, a team writer for several companies, an ambassador for skateboarding worldwide, and a guy who refuses to be defined by the date of his birth on his driver's license. Let's welcome Neil the Dude Unger. Hey, Neil, how are you?
Wow, good morning. That was really, really nice of you to say all that.
Well, you've earned it all. And speaking of the age on your driver's license, I've read your age as anywhere from 59 to 63, and I heard you say on a video that you think you were born in 1957. Why the confusion?
Oh, that just came out. That just came out kind of like by accident. But I do remember that I was born in May.
I can tell.
It was 1957.
Let me clear up my other confusion, because I also heard you skateboarded a bit as a kid. I've also read you started skateboarding later in life, and I've heard you say you are a beginner. So tell us about your skateboarding expertise.
Yeah, now, the reason I refer to that is because like anybody, I had a lot of battles and struggles in my childhood. And my mother, I believe, I had to really focus on this, because everybody asked me, when did you start skating? And I had to start really focusing on when did I really start. And I knew that my mother had bought me a skateboard, a complete. And it was one of those ones that they sold in a big production. And then that production ended, and then there was a period where you had to build your own skateboard. But in 1962, I came up with that year, and I think I'm pretty close. That's when my mother bought me a skateboard, and I used to ride it pushing with my one foot, and I was on my knee, and I'd go to the candy store and buy candy.
So Neil, there's a lot of us out there, you know, 60-ish, who are thinking we need to do something, you know, get up, find a way to get off the couch and get in shape. You know, maybe you think about golf, maybe you think about tennis. Not so many people thinking about skateboarding. What brought you back to doing that at your age?
Well, the irony is that for some reason at 9 years old, you know, my mom died when I was nine, and at 9 years old, I also remember thinking that I wanted to show the world that you could live to be a ripe old age. And I thought that at that time, I thought that I would have to run. I thought I would be a runner and that I would be running 10 miles a day. And then I began surfing at 9 years old also in San Diego. And surfing was an amazing thing. My first time I ever stood up on a surfboard, a 9-foot surfboard that my friend and I had to carry. It took two of us to carry one of those surfboards, but that was just amazing. And then it turns out that skateboarding is literally related to surfing. So, gosh, now I've forgot the original question already.
No, you answered it well. And we're talking to Neil Unger, folks, a soon-to-be 60-year-old skateboarder who is fairly well-known in social media, not just because he skates, but you can sense the attitude with which he skates. And you have said, Neil, that skateboarding turns your brain off. It almost sounds like it's kind of a meditation for you. Is that what you're in search of, a sense of calm and quiet?
Now, that's such a wonderful question. I can't believe how well that you put all this, because I actually was trying to improve myself at a young age, because I was like a miserable person, really. And I started a meditation, which was a transcendental meditation. And I was doing that, and, you know, to do that meditation, you're required to stop doing all some other negative things. You know, you can't put substances in your body because they want you to have a clear meditation. So I began meditating, and I meditated for years and years and years, and then of course I was skateboarding, and then much later as I got older I realized that skateboarding for me was a meditation. It was just ironic, because you don't think of doing something so dynamically active as being a meditation. Although it was exactly that for me, because your mind, you have to give your mind over to itself for it to work perfectly, you know, and you want it to work perfectly when you're in dangerous situations, and any dangerous sport will do that for you.
You know, you make it sound like that makes so much sense, and maybe that's part of what Dude Logic is all about, your book that's available on Amazon Kindle. Tell us about Dude Logic. What is that?
Yeah, I don't know if I can remember how I came up with that name. Oh, yes, one of my first sponsors, Saber.fm is what it is. They saw me skating. They asked if they could take my picture, and they kind of had me do some modeling and stuff, and they made me kind of famous in my early fame days. And now I've lost my train of thought. What was the question?
Dude Logic.
Oh, Dude Logic. Yeah, Dude Logic. So I they called me the Dude, and they had a pair of sunglasses that are called the Dudes, and they're those square ones that a lot of the young people actually like, that style, the old school square sunglasses, and I'm the Dude with Saber. And so when I wrote that book with my wife, my wife and I worked on that book together, and so I called it Dude Logic. It just I loved it, you know, Star Trek, you know, and Spock with his logic.
That's great. Yeah, this is a guy who, I love to watch you skate. And maybe a good example of the way you skate, Neil, is your appearance. You were the star of a rock music video for the band Moth in the Flame and their song Young and Afraid. So this is a song called Young and Afraid. And they've got Neil.
Young and Unafraid.
Young and Unafraid. Thank you. And they've got Neil Unger on a skateboard in a small room, trying tricks, stumbling, fumbling, falling off, getting back on, having success. I mean, it's such a great metaphor for life in general. You had to be thrilled with that whole experience.
Oh, wow, yes. It was really quite nice to do that, because that building was really sweet. The floor was, like, just so nice. And, you know, I could crash on that floor and not really get hurt, you know.
Hey, before we let you go, if we could look through your eyes, Neil, what have you learned about life? What's life really all about?
I think that if I could give a message that had some significance and importance, that's also simple, because, you know, you got to keep things simple to really to have that power. And what I would want to say is that if you could find a way to get to know what you are, like who you are, get to know what you are and who you are. If you could figure that out, it'd be like winning the lottery, because that happened to me, and I needed to do research in a couple different sources, you know, other people who had wisdom that I discovered, and The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, and then, of course, meditation, and then various very smart people, you know?
All right, he's laying a little dude logic on us. He is the dude, folks, Neil Unger. Check out his videos on YouTube and his book, Dude Logic, on Amazon. Google his name. You won't be disappointed. Neil, thanks so much for your time. Coming up, the 4'6", 100-year-old world record-holding sprinter who you just have to hear to believe. She's next on Growing Boulder. We've got news. Watch.growingboulder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingboulder.com is now live.
The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest.
Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton here with you on Growing Boulder. And almost any night of the week, when you watch the national news, there's going to be a story there about some new medical breakthrough, some new medicine that's going to change your life or make things better or make things easier. But you know what? There already is a medication that does miraculous things for anyone who uses it. That medicine is called exercise. You get it? By moving, doing movements, and it can change your life whether you're very, very young or very, very old, and we've got proof positive for you now.
It absolutely changed the life of our next guest. She is about to turn 101. She stands 4'6", weighs 83 pounds, and she is the current world record holder of the 100-meter dash for women in the 95 to 99-year-old age group. Let's welcome the world record-holding, amazing Miss Ida Keeling. Hey, Ida, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
Are you really a centenarian?
Of course I am. Being born in 1915, what could I be?
Amen to that. Now, before we talk about how well you're running now, let's talk about why you started running, because I understand you didn't start running until your late 60s after the tragic shooting death of your two sons. Is that true, and why did you start to run?
Yes. That's when I stopped really running. I was exercising before. We always start exercising at a very early age, especially back in the Depression times and even times before the Depression, when it was a Depression anyway. And when the Depression really came, people exercised and they walked a lot. Even though the car fare was 5 cents, 5 cents was a big deal. You could get a head of green cabbage for 5 cents, or maybe get a little cheaper white head for 3 or 4 cents and get some potatoes per a pound. And all these kind of things make you exercise in terms of walking, and being as I was already short, I have to climb and bend and reach and stretch for everything. And I always felt very good after that.
You know, Ida, being on the radio, we can't see you, but everybody can hear in your voice. You have such a spark of energy. You have a passion for life. Tell us about what is it that keeps you excited about life at 101?
Oh, that's easy. Attitude. Good attitude. You feel great about yourself and feel... Don't let nobody turn you around and change you up. Be you, stay strong, stay focused and alert. And all those kind of things are very important, especially to me, or especially should be to anybody who hits 50 and think they're old, because I've heard that tale quite a few times. oh, I'm getting old, I'm 50, and they have that old downbeat in their voice. I say to myself, I'm past 50, and they were talking 50 thinking I was younger.
You know, I want to pause right here, folks. I don't want to run this into the ground any more than we already have, but understand what we are listening to. We're listening to a woman who is about to turn 101 years old, who not only has passion for life, she's got a spark, she's got an attitude, and oh, by the way, she has run 100 meters faster than any female human being in the history of this planet. Tell us about that. Ida, are you a competitor? Do you hate to lose? What was it like when you set the world record?
Well, when I set the world record, I hate to lose, but I have to understand that people are younger, and my pace may be a little slower, but I just keep going. But I have beaten and some that was younger, and I just kept going, and sometimes I have to run in a race where there's people like from 60 to 80 or something like that. You know, I just have to do the best I can with what's left. So that's the way I am.
How much does it do for you, Ida, to get up and to go out to these competitions?
How much does it?
Yeah, how much good does it?
How does that feel?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I feel great first. I have to stay prepared mentally plus physically and make up my mind, this is it. I'm going to do the best I can. And my best always works for me.
I have heard, Ida, that you're actually working on a new book called Back in the Day. Is that true? Are you working on becoming an author at the age of 101?
Yes. I would like to, this is my book. I have it. This book is, what?
You're working on a book.
I'm working on a book now. Yes, I am. But, I have to wait, as I go along and, I fill in how I feel and how things are going.
Okay, Ida, you've got the entire radio audience right now listening to every word. You are an incredible inspiration. You have more power than you know because we all are learning from and being inspired by you. So what do you say? What's the moral of your story? What's the secret to living life like you do at your age?
Thank God that I can do it, and I'm very happy to hear and feel that I can inspire people like that. It makes me feel even greater than my height.
And Ida, we want to thank you for being that person, for stepping up and being an inspiration, for showing the rest of us that 50 doesn't mean anything, that if we act like Ida Keeling, that we can look forward to as many as 5 more decades of good, active, vibrant life. So, Ida, keep raising that bar. We're very, very proud of you, and we're very grateful that you're willing to spread your message on the Growing Boulder radio show.
And we're going to leave you with a simple yet important question. No matter how old you are now, whether it's 18 or 88, how do you view aging? Do you have a glass half empty or a glass half full perspective? Do you view aging with pessimism or optimism? Do you see it as a time of weakness, sadness, loneliness, fear, and regret? Or do you see it as a time of health, opportunity, adventure, friendship, and purpose? In other words, are you simply growing older or are you growing bolder? How you answer that question will, to a large degree, inform the rest of your life. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow, Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. Older than I'm younger than that now. Half right prejudice leap for rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is black and white spoke from my skull I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers foundation deep.